namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Last verse for Canto 9, Chapter 15, Text 41. Ragyo murdhabi chiktasya vadho brahma vidhaguru tirta samsevaya chamha jayangachuta chaitanaha Ragyo murdhabhishiktasya vadho brahma vidhaguru tirta samsevaya chamho janaghachuta chaitanaha ragyaha of the king, murdha abhishiktasya, who is noted as the emperor, vadaha, the killing, brahma vadhat, the killing of a brahmana, guruho, more severe, tirtha samsevaya, by worshipping the holy places. Cha, also. Amhaha, the sinful act. Jahi, wash out. Anga, oh my dear son. Achyuta Chaitanaha, being fully Krishna conscious. Translation, my dear son, killing a king who is an emperor is more severely sinful than killing a brahmana. But now, if you become Krishna conscious and worship the holy places, you can atone for this great sin. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. One who fully surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is freed from all sins. Aham tvam sarva pape bhyo moksha yishyami. From the very day or moment he fully surrenders to Sri Krishna, even the most sinful person is freed nonetheless. As an example, Jamadagni advised his son Parashurama to worship the holy places because an ordinary person cannot immediately surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is advised to go from one holy place to another to find saintly persons and thus gradually be released from sinful reactions. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 9th canto, 15th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Parashurama, the Lord's warrior incarnation. The emphasis given here, of course, is our forceful founder Acharya again and again, and here in this case again, helping us through his instructions to take full shelter of the Supreme Personality Godhead and become freed. One who becomes fully Krishna conscious by that method becomes released at once from all sinful reactions. And that's encouraging. All we have to do is fully surrender, right? That's all. Just fully surrender. Now what about the rest of us? Just like chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita. If you can't do that, do this. You can't do that, do this. If you can't do that, do the other thing. So the gradual process is also being spoken, because the gradual process, and for that matter, the whole of the Vedas is meant to bring one to that same position, which is full surrender to the personality of Godhead. And by that method, surrender, and surrender means devotional service, one can know Krishna. That's the goal. The whole of the Kalpa Vriksha, sometimes the Vedas, are compared to a desire tree, and all desires can be fulfilled. And then there's this less known fact that one desire can take care of all desires. Right? That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's definition of faith. Shraddha Shrabde Vishvas Kahe Sudridha Nishchaya Krishne Bhakti Starva Karma Kritahaya. So that definition is very nice. That is, faith means confidence, conviction, that if you achieve one thing, all other desirable things are achieved, so you don't have to chase after the so many desirable things, you just focus on one thing. And then even the other things, they're pursuant to that one thing. If you do this, you do that, or the other thing, it's pursuant of that one thing. So that's what Bhakti Siddhanta calls dovetail. Dovetail is a nice word. Not a commonly used word in English language. Bhakti Siddhanta would commonly use English words that weren't commonly used, because they were appropriate. You know, precisely dictionary perfect appropriate. Dovetail, I looked it up, because, you know, it's not a usually used word. So dovetail, one of the applications of dovetail is a carpentry term. When you join pieces of wood, one piece of wood to another piece of wood, that's called dovetail in carpentry. So once upon a time, people used to do things with other than glue. So they had, you know, little pieces. The one piece goes like this, and then there's a gap, and another piece that goes like this, and there's a gap, and then the other piece fits in. And then it's said, when you join two pieces of wood by that method, it's stronger than one piece of wood. So the dovetail principle is important. And the dovetail principle is meant for same purpose as the primary is the secondary. So the primary activities of bhakti give strength to the secondary activities of bhakti. And in fact, Gona Dharma, there's a misprint in the BBT, it says Guna, but it's Gona Dharma is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's use of that term is our worldly duties. You know, the Varnashram thing. And when the duties of one's varna and ashram are done, joined with the primary activities of bhakti, you know, the nine processes of bhakti, then they're as purifying as the nine primary activities of bhakti. That's good to know. There's only one thing, just have to surrender to Krishna. That one thing doesn't disappear. That the secondary things are given their strength from the primary things. And then they become as effective as the primary thing. The topic comes up, we'll come back to this Bhagavatam, ninth canto topic. The topic comes up in Brahma Samhita, where after all of Brahma's beautiful prayers, the Govinda prayers, we commonly know them as. Monkeys? Huh?
Human or monkey?
Okay. Okay. Little distraction. So, after the Brahma Samhita prayers, the very next and the last section of Brahma Samhita, this little Brahma Samhita class, there's five verses where the personality of Godhead Govinda is responding to an unspoken question, because Krishna is within the heart of Brahma. And so after all this exalted realization, Brahma has a doubt. And what's that doubt? The doubt is, I've got to create a universe. You know, I got to manage a temple. Both of you. Or I got to, you know, raise my family. You know, I got these propensities, and so if I do those propensities things, I'm going to forget all this nice stuff that I just realized. And if I don't do my duties, it's sinful, and I'm going to get covered by sinful reaction, and I'm going to forget everything. So, you know, damned if I do and damned if I don't. What do I do, Krishna? He has a doubt. So we may also have a doubt. It goes something, you know, how am I going to maintain, how am I going to advance in Krishna consciousness when I have all worldly stuff? You just become a Mayavadi and just like trash it. Make it zero. Become a Buddhist. Just call it false and give it a bad name and don't do anything. Karma sannyas. Krishna doesn't approve karma sannyas. Krishna approves karma palatyag, dedication of everything unto Krishna. So the answer that's given by Krishna to Brahma is, keeping it really simple, no problem. Or as they say in Australia, no worries. Right? No worries. You do your creating of the universe over here while you're also doing your direct activities of bhakti. And when you do your direct activities of bhakti, oh, thank you very much, then those duties are as purifying as the direct activities of bhakti. That's the dovetail principle. And there's just a small thing. You just have to surrender to Krishna. You know, smartavya satatam vishnur, vismartavya najata chit. Small thing. And then supposing you can't do that all the time. Like most of us, we can't do that all the time. So we take some things that are helping us to remember Krishna all the time. Those are the indirect things, or the secondary things. So in this case, the secondary thing is not precisely the primary thing, and that is go visit the places of pilgrimage. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he points to the word in the verse, cha. It's a nice word. Cha means and. Cha. Ha-ha. Tirtha samsevaya cha. So, he says this word cha indicates these secondary activities. Or yama and niyama, that's what he writes. So what's yama and niyama? It's the do's and the don'ts, because the do's and the don'ts, they help the primary. They're not primary. Let's say it this way, same thing. Every religion has some things you do, rituals. And rituals may vary in the, you know, the Western, in universities in the West, I don't know what it's like in other parts of the world, but when they give a religion class, I know this because religion classes come to our temples and they want to check out our rituals, because that's what they learn, what they teach in school is religions differ by their rituals. So you look at their rituals and you can tell this is this religion and that's that religion and that's... So when they come, they like to come when we do our rituals. You know. And then the curtain opens. That's a ritual. And then everybody pays obeisances. That's another ritual. And then we go to all three altars, and then we go to, you know, the next ritual, the Guru Puja ritual. And we garland Prabhupada, and, you know, rituals. And then we do our Jayarada Madhava ritual. You know, the teacher has prepared them. Check it out. Take your pictures. That's their rituals. And that's what their religion is, you know, that which is not the essence is their religion. So we're being taught those things may vary, that's fine, but that's not the essence. And a religious person will follow the rituals, the yamas and the niyamas, but that's not the essence. What's the essence? Those things are to help us do the one thing that's not so easy for us to do, take full shelter of Krishna. They're to assist us in that, and their strength is when they're dedicated to that. Take full shelter of Krishna. Then, you know, our pujaris ring a bell and wave a stick of incense. So many circles. And we follow the procedure. We ring the bell in so many circles. But that's not the essence. So if the essence is the offering to Krishna, you give your heart to Krishna. That's the essence. And that will help us. That following in the right consciousness will help us. So we have training that teaches us what the procedures are, the paying of obeisances, etc. There's a purpose. It's namaha. Namaha literally means no false ego. That's what it means, according to Padma Purana. Namaha, no false ego. So you can pay obeisances and be really filled with false ego. I mean, it just helps to overcome false ego. The essence is take shelter of the personality of Godhead. So the yamas and niyamas, that's Vishwanath's gloss. I just share something because I've been spending a lot of time of the last several months with the Dhruva Maharaj story. And we just yesterday we were discussing Narada's instructions to Dhruva in taking shelter of the lotus feet of Vishnu to become a pure devotee, because he was a mixed devotee, how to become pure devotee. And one of the things he recommends, this is Narada's instructions to Dhruva, is go take bath and go to Madhuvan, place in Vrindavan, take bath thrice daily in the river Jamuna, because it will purify you. The waters are purifying. It will purify you. It's not the essence, but it helps us get closer to Krishna. And then he says, you sit in a certain place, an asana, and then you practice Ashtanga Yoga, because it's Satya Yoga. In Dhyan or Dhyayate, that's what you do in Satya Yoga. And by following those practices of Ashtanga Yoga, you'll become purified. That's a secondary thing. It's not the essence. But the purpose of that Ashtanga Yoga thing is not just do asanas and you feel good or whatever. It's purification. And then there's things that happen after that purification. He then describes, in that purified state, fix your mind on the personality of Godhead. It describes the form in detail. Then says again, fix your mind on the form of the personality of Godhead, and you'll become purified. I mean, like further purified. But that's not it. Just fix your mind on the form of the Lord. It's engaging in devotional service. So, that's just a detail that's illustrating this point, the cha. In this case, it's the father of Parashuram advising him cha toward, it will help him do the essence, to take shelter of the personality of Godhead and worship the holy places, you can atone for this great sin. And the additional point, just make mention, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes reference to this phrase, achyuta chetana. It's right in the verse. And he explains, I'm going to read, with consciousness that never fails. This indicates the chit-shakti of the Lord. The Lord is endowed with his chit-shakti, thus does not have to perform atonements, but he does so to teach the people. So this going to places of pilgrimage, coming to Vrindavan as we have, it's putting us in contact with chit-shakti. So one may say, well, that sounds pretty direct to me. Not, what's indirect about that? But the essence, one can do, come to the holy Dhamma Vrindavan and do bad stuff. Right? I mean, sometimes people do that, bad stuff. So the essence isn't, the make connection with chit-shakti for the purpose of engaging in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full submission. That's why it's just like Varnashram is considered secondary, right? We're not to abandon Varnashram because it's secondary, but it's not the essence. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy. It's not the essence. Say it again. Because it's not the essence, we don't trash it. We do it because it's recommended. But when we do it, it's with a purpose. Take full shelter of the personality of Godhead. And when one has taken full shelter of the personality of Godhead, you're not obliged. We haven't taken full shelter of the personality of Godhead, most of us probably. And so we're obliged. And how do you customize that obligation according to time, place, circumstance? That's a long discussion. It's been going on for about 4 decades. That long. How do you do it? What does it look like? But it's something that Prabhupada wanted us to do. Not just those people out there that don't know anything about Krishna. It's not for us. Some people say it's not for us. It's for us. But what does it look like? That's another topic. So it's a secondary thing that helps us achieve the primary thing. Smartavya satatam vishnur vismartavya najata chit. And all other vidhis and nishedhas, or using this language of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the yamas and niyamas, the do's and the don'ts, the recommended and the things to be avoided, they're pursuant to one thing, full shelter of the personality of Godhead. And when one has taken full shelter, that's when you'll always remember. When there's love, you'll always remember. Until that stage, we need to be guided by the vidhis and nishedhas. So that's a little summary of the verse, and I was informed that this is the disappearance day of three exalted personalities. So I'd like to speak something about those, and then I'll stop and see if there's some discussion. Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Rasik Ananda, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj. One of Tamal Krishna Maharaj's disciples is seated here, so he'll probably be doing something along with the other devotees, and I'm sure back in Houston they're having a big festival in honor of Tamal Krishna Maharaj and his departure. We'll start with Jagannath Das Babaji. His position in our Hare Krishna movement is shh. is very significant. He's on all of our altars. That's pretty significant. And there's a reason. Just because of time limitation, just say a few things. He was the primary person to inspire, revive, carry forward Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his dedication to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We know much more about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life than Jagannath Das Babaji's life, but he lived here in Vrindavan primarily. And during that period of time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur came to Vrindavan. He had received already Diksha, but his Diksha Guru wasn't of the topmost caliber, putting it nicely. But Jagannath Das Babaji was. And the inspiration and deep understanding, etc., during a very difficult stretch of time in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when things had become very much deteriorated, Jagannath Das Babaji hadn't become deteriorated. He was in full force of Krishna Bhakti. And that was a primary inspiration, the primary Shiksha Guru for our great Acharya Jagannath, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So that's in our pictures in disciplic succession, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Jagannath Das Babaji. And then in the elder stage of his life, he lived over 100 years, and he was not able to move around, you could say invalid. He had to be carried in a basket. But by Bhaktivinoda Thakur's request, Jagannath Das Babaji came all the way from Vrindavan. Imagine leaving Vrindavan at such an elder age to go to Mayapur. And an arrangement was made by Bhaktivinoda Thakur for a residence for him. Many of you have probably visited that place in Navadvip. Very sublime place. And just two additional things about his life. Celebrated for Bhaktivinoda Thakur was rediscovering the lost place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birth by his spiritual acumen and the gift of Krishna. But confirming it was more than the information that he had. About, for example, the now city of Navadvip is on the western bank of the Ganga. And it says over and over again that the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on the eastern bank of the Ganga. And then the city of now Navadvip was new. And so why is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu new? Because it was very old. And then further study, the course of the Ganges, it was predicted, and sure enough, by study of history, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world, the course of the Ganges shifted in an easterly direction, so what was the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was now underwater. And then some time passed and it shifted back. And then the now city of Navadvip was established. So, without all the details, so many other things happened, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur became convinced that that's not the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is. So he brought Jagannath Das Babaji to the place, and we all know what happened. The invalid who Jagannath Das Babaji, because of his age, was carried in a basket, and he jumped up in the basket and high in the air, and, this is it. Haribo, this is it. Gauranga. That being the greater confirmation than any other thing. Even later, the archaeological evidence, when the foundation of the temple of the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dug, it was found the deity, Adhoksaja Vishnu, deity of Jagannathas Babaji, deep in the ground. So that's an archaeological, that's it. You know, it's a physical, palpable, tangible, sense-perceivable verification. That's what we rely on. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was more relying on the confirmation of Jagannathas Babaji. That was his faith, and that was Jagannathas Babaji's, who can say, you know, his superlative capacity by connection with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then those of you that have been to the final, Jagannathas Babaji, where his bhajan kutir was, and where he also left this world, there's a little veranda in the back of the temple with a nice big shade tree, and it is said from that place where he would regularly sit and chant, he had darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, would you like to have darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? You got to become qualified. And the teaching is, that's what happens when you become qualified. You don't have to go find the Lord. He'll come to see you. That's our teaching. And that's what happened with Jagannathas Babaji. Now, Rasikananda, a little bit about his life. He was a disciple of Shyamananda, one of the three that were received instruction here in Vrindavan under Jiva Goswami, and three were sent, and Shyamananda became his guru, sent by Jiva Goswami to, with the books of the Goswamis, to give to the rest of the world, at least that part, those parts of India, to revive the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through the Goswamis. So Rasikananda was born the son of a zamindar. It's a detail in his biography described in Bhakti Ratnakar, that where his father's name was Achyutananda, the area that he was the zamindar is just like a nice word for meaning a landholder. So he was like a king because he was a landholder. And the area that he was the zamindar of included a place where, according to Bhakti Ratnakar, Ramachandra stayed for some time during that 14 years of exile. Which is interesting. Because, anyway, it's without all that, how it's interesting. And Ramachandra established a temple of Lord Shiva that's locally known. This is local story. Rameshwara. Just like in South India, that there's a Rameshwaram temple and deity. So Achyutananda was the zamindar of that area, and his son Rasikananda, or also known as Murari, or also known as Rasika Murari, those are three names by which he was known. He had very elevated spiritual quality from his birth. And as a young man, he was eager like anything to find guru, and he was weeping at night, in the evening, and heard a voice from the sky saying, "No worries." Very soon, Shyamananda will come and he will be your guru, and take full shelter of him. He heard a voice in the sky. And so all night long, he's with his beads, he's chanting Shamananda, Shamananda, Shamananda. And at the break of dawn, Shamananda came. And Shamananda said, don't worry. You are my disciple. And very soon I will give you diksha. And from that time onward, Rasikananda was a very elevated disciple of Shamananda. And it is said that during his life, Rasikananda was a very powerful preacher. Dacoits, Muslims, and all kinds of unqualified people, he transformed them by his ecstatic, pure bhakti. So much so, according to Bhakti Ratnakar, that people became envious of him. And so they sent an elephant to stampede him and crush him. And then it doesn't give the detail in Bhakti Ratnakar, but he converted the elephant to a devotee and gave him initiation. The envious people were stopped in their tracks. And on, many, many wonderful stories about his ecstatic bhakti. And a significant part of our history, Gaudiya history, is one of Rasikananda's, because he spent substantial time in Puri, one of his disciples of Rasikananda became the instructing guru of Baladev Vidyabhusan. Because Baladev Vidyabhusan, a near contemporary of Jagannath Das Babaji, long story, but after he received initiation and training in the Madhva Sampradaya, he wanted to go back because he's from Orissa. His birthplace is very near to Ramuna. Those of you that visit Ramuna, you can visit his birthplace. He wanted to go back and, you know, worship Jagannath near his place of birth. So when he went back, he met this disciple of Rasikananda. Maybe it was a grand disciple. Grand disciple. And through that grand disciple, he learned about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And specifically even the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami. And he was like, wow, I got to learn more about this. So he then came here to Vrindavan. So Rasikananda had like generations worth of influence, is the point. And this is his disappearance day. So he had, there's many nice things that, one of Shamananda's deities named Govinda at Gopi Ballabhapur, he entrusted that worship to Rasikananda, who cherished Govinda. But a deity that he loved very much was the deities in Ramuna. So those of you that have visited Ramuna, you'll remember over there in the courtyard is the samadhi of Rasikananda. Very interesting, just like it is said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world by entering into the body of Gopinath, it is said that Rasikananda entered the body of the deities in Ramuna. He got up and in the midst of a kirtan and ran towards the altar and entered into the altar and disappeared into the body of the deity. That's pretty fantastic. Who knows what platform Rasikananda was on? That was his disappearance. And our exalted Tamal Krishnaraj, not so long ago there was also a little remembrance of the disappearance of Gaur Govinda Maharaj. There was his picture over here, right? Same day as Bhakti Siddhanta's disappearance. Be nice to have Tamal Krishnaraj's picture next year. If you're here next year, you can make that arrangement. What can you say about Tamal Krishna Maharaj? One of the great heroes and warriors and soldiers in Prabhupada's army. Indomitable courage and determination. You know, really intense personality. But Prabhupada called upon him when there was Mission Impossible, and he achieved it time and again. You know, one of the celebrated ones was purchasing land in Mayapur. Many people tried, were unsuccessful. He sent to Mount Krishna Maharaj, and it was done. The details I don't know, but I don't need to know. Just he's, you know, was capable of, he's a very powerful person, empowered by his relationship with Prabhupada and Krishna. And, you know, the whole history and Juhu and all of that, he was intimately involved in the Radha Damodar party and starting preaching in China and he left this world on this day, leaving Mayapur, having attended the Mayapur GBC meeting. And, you know, during that meeting, I remember very clearly, there was like every evening there was a hootenanny, a big assembly of devotees in Tamal Krishna Maharaj's rooms. And, you know, inspiring the devotees in ways that he was capable of. And when the festival was over, in a car ride on his way back to the Calcutta airport, the driver fell asleep and crashed into a tree, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was in the front seat and didn't survive. So then his body was brought in a big ceremony in Mayapur. His samadhi is there. So we're honoring his disappearance day today here in Vrindavan. Very interesting orange caps. That's so they can know who's who, I guess, huh? So any, I wanted to save some time for some discussion and see if there's some comments or questions. There's a microphone if you have a comment or question.
Thank you for coming to Krishna Balaram Mandir. So
thank you for being here to maintain this, you know, not so easy place to maintain.
For your blessings.
And special Shakti given by Krishna Balaram to you to do it.
So there are many saintly great charyas and personalities, and many of them are our gurus. So we have certain ones who have achieved or recognition. Like, we still know about Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, and all the history of all the great acharyas. So if we were to do all the acharyas, are we being disrespectful to some acharyas that maybe have not been recognized as much in a worldly way? You know, the thing is sometimes we say, oh, my guru should be worshipped here or there. So maybe sometimes as the society grows, you know what the standards are. Not that we're looking for standards, but just the general idea of our mindset for worshipping the great acharyas who have disappeared.
That's a touchy question. You know, my thought when I'm hearing your question is, after Arti, we say, all glories to the assembled devotees, three times. And I'm thinking, what about the unassembled devotees? There's devotees all over the place. Like, are we being disrespectful to the devotees that aren't assembled? That's what I was thinking when you were asked your question. I don't think it's disrespectful. It's something like, you know, bancha kalpaturubhyascha. That's generic. It's to everybody. And that's something specific to offense. I heard a recording of Prabhupada being asked, Prabhupada, it says in Nectar Devotion that, you know, if you've offended a devotee, then you got a reaction coming to you, and you're supposed to go to that devotee that you've offended, and supposing you don't even know that you offended that devotee, or they're like, long ago, and now what do you do? And Prabhupada's answer was, therefore, every day we say, Manchakalpa Trubhyascha. Now, that's like, okay, rubber stamp. I did it. Now I'm free from offenses of people that are debris behind me because I just kind of offended them, knowingly or unknowingly. So, it's not the... to make our slate clean, it's the essence of offering respects to all the Vaishnavas. And if you focus in a singular fashion on a Vaishnava, it's not disrespectful to all Vaishnavas. That's my reply. It's not a lot depends on the consciousness behind the act of glorification. And if the general principle is Vancha Kalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha, and if that's the regard, the consciousness behind the act of glorifying a particular exalted Vaishnava, that's wonderful. I see a hand in the ladies' section back there. You're very enthusiastic. Compliments for your enthusiasm. Go ahead.
Thank you for your wonderful class. It's rare for me to be able to hear you directly like this. Maharaj, you mentioned in your class about rituals. I was hearing the class on the radio before I walked in. And if I heard correctly, during the rituals you were mentioning about how singing Jagada Madhava and then the Guru Puja, all that is like a ritual. Did I hear
it correctly? Well, it's viewed by scholars, those are our rituals.
Okay, but for devotees, you mean that that's our way of expressing our love to them?
Yes. So, but it can be ritualized. Let's say this. One of our leading devotees raise the question, when you're paying obeisances, what's in your mind? What's the consciousness behind the paying of obeisances? And it can be a ritual when devotees pay obeisances, or it can be a submission, namaha. And that way, that's a dovetail. And the dovetail becomes as powerful as the essence. The essence is not, it's not paying obeisances. The essence is not waving a stick of incense so many circles. That's not the essence. We do, and it's our way of worshiping the Lord. Okay? It's the consciousness behind the act. That's the essence. That's my point.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, do I understand correctly then? You're saying that this is our... through that action is how we are offering the real thing.
Yeah. I'll say this same thing in a different way. We're not the International Society for Behavior Modification Incorporated. We're the International Society for Krishna Consciousness Incorporated. And ISKCON does certain things, and that, but it's the Krishna consciousness, it's not the behavior or the ritual. That's the essence. That's my point. Okay? We have 3 minutes. Ah! There's another enthusiastic hand waver. Okay. Slowly.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, you mentioned about rituals. So
I did.
The question is faith a byproduct of ritual, or faith, ritual plus faith a ultimately culminates in bhakti.
You were speaking slowly in the beginning part, but then you speed it up at the end. Can you just do the last part again? I'm
rituals.
I got the first part.
So ritual is bhakti, byproduct of ritual, or ritual plus bhakti ultimately is and ritual plus faith is ultimately bhakti.
What do you think? What's your opinion? What's your understanding?
My experience is like initially when I came to Krishna consciousness, it was more of rituals. I like to come and see deities, dance and take prasad, and slowly I started developing some faith, okay, this is the process. So would like to know, like some people I also seen like they are, it's like more of rituals. Like I'm from South India, and it's like people, they say like the age of 9 and 15, you want us to take Brahman Diksha. And they do that, but ultimately I don't see they have any bhakti, it's more of a ritual. At this age you have to do take Brahman Diksha and things like that. So what exactly?
What's exactly? That's the tough word. So, here we have in Vrindavan many people, they're in the, you know, Kanishta Adhikari position. They don't respect the Madhyama Adhikari activity of speaking, only because there's a rope do they stay there. But otherwise, you get the idea. But it's bhakti. It's Kanishta bhakti. And to such persons, the Kanishta, God is in the temple. And they go to the temple to see God, and that's piety. But it's transcendental piety. It's helping them go to the next stage and to the next stage and to the next stage. Here's an example. In one temple, every morning, right in the middle of class, this gentleman, before he went to work, would come walking right through the middle of the class with a plastic bag that had stuff in it, like we wanted to put on the altar, and it was like we weren't even there in the class. And he went to the altar, made a lot of noise, taking, you know, the whatever he had in the plastic bag, put it on the altar, and stood there aloud, saying his prayers, took Charanamrita and left, and walked right through the middle of the class, like, you know, Kanishta is it. And Madhyama is, you know, but he's a bhakta. He came every day, and we, you know, took him to the side and said, you know, what needs to be said, and he'd smile and he'd do the same thing the next day and the next day. Every day. So we just had to learn to tolerate because that was his platform. But was there bhakti in what he was doing? Yes. Was it ritualistic? Yes. Was he getting purified by bhakti? Yes. You know, it was like Kanishta Kanishta. So I've been told in the Gaudiya temples, there's Kanishta Kanishta, Madhyama Kanishta, Uttama Kanishta. And then Kanishta Madhyama, Madhyama Madhyama, and Uttama Madhyama. Like that. So he was like a Kanishta Kanishta. But he had bhakti. And he was getting purified. Although it was like, God is in the temple. And I'm going to see God in the temple. And, you know, the bhaktas, it's classic. There's no understanding of bhaktas, etc. We, like, didn't exist. But it was bhakti. And he was becoming purified by bhakti. Does that answer your question? Last question, we're already past time. So you got to be quick. Yes.
So I want to know that he was a very nice devotee, but how did he get his body by accident?
How? Krishna. Krishna wanted him to go somewhere. So Krishna took him. He took him the way that Krishna wants to take him. You go ask Krishna why did he take him that way. we're dependent upon Krishna's plan and we don't question Krishna's plan. I mean, if you can go ask Krishna that question, then you can tell us what his answer is.
What happens is Krishna's plan. What does that mean?
What does it mean? You know, he has his intention. Why that method, I cannot say. Why? But that's, you know, it's because it's his will, and by his will is infallible. He could have, you know, it could have happened a zillion other ways. Your question is why that way? It's up to Krishna. It's his intention, and he had it happen the way that he had it happen. I don't know why. But that's the meaning of Krishna's will. It's just, he wanted it, so voila. Bhavati. It happened. Srila Prabhupada ki, go Premanandi.